This podcast is protected by copyright and not for broadcast. See rsn.net.au for more details.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Talking Horses. This week, we take you to Asia Horse Week in Hong Kong, a two-day rendezvous of global leaders in horse sport, held in conjunction with one of the biggest show jumping shows in the world, the Longines Masters of Hong Kong. Equestrianism is booming in Asia, especially mainland China. There are now more than 400,000 people riding there and more than 1,800 equestrian clubs. And that number is growing by the minute. 17 major events are now staged each year throughout the region. And in Hong Kong alone, there has been a 134% increase in the number of FEI registered horses. As the FEI Secretary General Sabrina Ibanez summed up, there's clearly a buzz here in Asia, and we are here to ensure it is well managed and enhanced. And this growth all has a big flow-on effect to Australia, currently the second biggest exporter of horses in the world to China. Horse welfare was also a huge theme throughout the 2 days. And interestingly, the current issue in Australian racing involving Darren Weir made for discussion in a presentation by the CEO of World Horse Welfare, Rolly Owers. World Horse Welfare is a highly respected campaign organisation for proper equine use that has been operating for more than 90 years. I caught up with Rolly soon after his presentation to discuss this very important topic of horse welfare. Rolly, never before has horse welfare been such a significant focus for equestrian sport and the thoroughbred and other racing industries globally. What's your current position on it all?
Well, equine welfare needs to be at the heart of wherever we use horses. And of course, we use horses in so many different ways in the 21st century, as animals for leisure, as farm animals, as working animals, as animals for therapy. But of course, the most high profile is horse sport and using them in equestrian sport. And because that is done for people's enjoyment, it places an ever greater responsibility on us to look after the animals that we're competing to the best of our abilities.
So what essentially is the function of World Horse Welfare and the role that you play?
So we are a campaigning organisation, and so we will campaign for proper equine use around the world in all its different forms. We seek to educate. The biggest reason for equine negligence and abuse around the world is because of ignorance. And so it's so important, both in the developed world of equestrian nations of the UK and Europe and the US, but also the developing nations. And of course Asia, you know, that is happening. Happening so quickly, it's so important that education is at the heart of that. But also, we provide hands-on care, both in the UK and in low and middle-income countries, where we're actually supporting equines on the ground.
How do you rate current public perception of horse sport based on some of the more recent welfare issues we've faced in all parts of the sport?
I think it's tricky because too often the public only hear about equine welfare in a negative context, whether it be Duncan Weir being banned for 4 years for having sort of electrical training aids, whether it be overuse of the whip in eventing, or whether it be equine fatalities or equine injuries. So what the sport needs to do is to try and get more on the front foot, try and do more to explain to the general public and build that trust that actually a lot is being done to protect equine health and welfare in horse sport. But that is a constant task and challenge, because otherwise equine welfare will always be seen in that negative context, and that's very damaging to equine sport.
From an Australian racing perspective, it was hugely concerning but not entirely surprising that you did reference the Darren Weir case in your address today. That has had a huge effect on perception right across the world, hasn't it?
Absolutely. And because someone who is at the top of their sport is being seen to cheat, but not only be seen to cheat, but also to abuse equines and horse welfare in the way that he did. So, but I'm a firm believer in every cloud has a silver lining. And just like when we have big disease outbreaks, it's a wake-up call to responsible biosecurity. This incident is a wake-up call to the importance of placing equine welfare at the heart of what we're doing. doing, and it cannot, equine sport and equine and horse racing can never be a win at all cost mentality, because if that comes the case, then there will be no future for horse sport.
How do you continue to effectively agitate for positive change and better focus on the management and welfare of horses in particular?
At the heart, it's about education, because especially in regions of the world like here, where more and more people, but also in Europe and in the US, around the world and in Australia, new people are coming into the sport all the time. So it's so important to place education at the heart and to make sure that riders, trainers, but also stewards and judges, because one of the key issues in agitating for change within horse sport is to make sure that the rules are updated, but also they're properly enforced, and there must be robust sanctions for any abuse of equine welfare. And there have been cases where sanctions haven't been appropriate or haven't been done quick enough, and that's why we would applaud the Australian racing authorities for the robust and quick action they took in this case.
That's exactly right. So where to from here, do you think, for the Australian racing industry, and firstly addressing that type of behaviour in the ranks, the participants of the racing industry, but beyond that, long term, what's the solution to fixing the downward slide of negative public perception?
So it's twofold. It's one about going with the times, and as we increasingly understand more about equine welfare, we understand more and more about horse behaviour, about how horses learn. Obviously the world of veterinary medicine grows all the time, so it's about doing the right things by our horses, by updating how we do things, constantly challenging how we train our horses, how we manage our horses. But it's also then that piece about building trust with the general public, getting them to understand that we're doing the right thing, because as I so often say, we might be doing the right things by our horses in the way we manage them, but if the general public think we're doing it the wrong way, then you're in an equally difficult position. So it's two ways. It's about doing the right thing with our horses, but also showing people very clearly that we are doing that too.
And the general public are keeping the world a far more honest place generally these days than ever before, namely because of social media, and that's been a powerful tool to communicate some of the issues at the heart of welfare in anything to do with equestrian or horse racing.
Absolutely. I mean, social media is very much a twin-edged sword, because as you rightly say, it has been such a power for good, but also it has been a power for bad in sort of very vindictive campaigns against individuals who sometimes it's not justified. So it's a matter of getting that perspective as ever. And a good example is still photographs. You know, you can take a still photograph of a horse which would appear to show hyperflexion is one example, a horse in pain, but it's very difficult to actually understand what that horse is going through in that one particular moment. So getting perspective with social media can be a challenge, but in terms of education, for example, the digital world has just transformed the way we can get educational messages out. So it's definitely better, but far more positive than negative, but sometimes it does come with its challenges too.
Molly, thanks for sharing your insights with us and for your contribution to the betterment of equine welfare around the world.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here, and really enjoyed chatting.
We continue our focus on the second edition of Asia Horse Week. An historic event for the horse world took place on the final day of the conference. The auction by Arcana was staged with an amazing collection of horse embryos, combining some of the best show jumping bloodlines in the world, and they attracted keen bidding from buyers. The president of leading French auction house Arcana, Eric Hoyer, led the sale on the ground from Asia Horse Week, the Asia World Expo in Hong Kong. Bids were also taken online and at the sales company's headquarters in Deauville, France. A big and enthusiastic crowd was in attendance to witness the historic first embryo auction of its kind in the Asian region. I caught up with the man behind this novel idea, Christophe Amieux, who is also the founder of Asia Horse Week and the Longines Masters. The Belgian-based horseman is now one of the most influential figures in the world of equestrian and sport horse breeding and competition. Christophe, congratulations on what you've achieved here with not only the Longines Hong Kong Masters show jumping event, but also Asia Horse Week now in its second year. You had an incredible lineup of speakers this year.
Yes, you know, I'm very happy because the second edition of the Asia Horse Week, and I think is for me the good answer, because the quality of the speakers, the quality of the contents, the quality of the partners, you know, with this fantastic founding partners of the Hong Kong Jockey Club, and with the FEI, the president from the FEI was here with all his team, and the content was amazing. I think when we can use the Longines Masters of Hong Kong like a platform and organize one of the bigger meeting points here in Asia, I think it's very important for the development of the equestrian sport, you know, and we are very happy with this.
What initially inspired you to bring jumping to Hong Kong?
But you know, when you dream about put your sport, equestrian, under the spotlight, you want the best development for your sport. Sure, 10 years before, that was Asia, like all the brands, like all the business, like all the sports. The only way for come to Asia, that was Hong Kong, because the DNA, the horse's DNA with the Hong Kong Jockey Club, because the legacy from the Olympic Games 2008, and because the only way for the quarantine, horse's quarantine, hey, we came to Hong Kong. And today, 7 years after, is so successful. This show is tailor-made for Hong Kong. This show is tailor-made for the community. But what we can feel, and this is why the Asia Horse Week, is the potential and the capacity of the development. We are here in the Asia World Expo, in the airport, connect with this new bridge to the big Guangdu province, Shenzhen, Macau. We reach, I think, more than 1 million Chinese people, less than 45-55 minutes by bus and car, and this is the development, this is the future. And when sure next few years, 10 years, I don't know, we can go to China with the best of the sport and the best foundation. But today Hong Kong is the place to be. Today Hong Kong is the beginning of the story, because there are many things we can do, and this Asia Horse Week is today, it will be the Davos Equestre in Asia.
It's quite incredible, the rapid growth of equestrian sports in mainland China.
Yes, yes, unbelievable. I saw the numbers with you. It's very impressive. And it's why we have so many interest from everybody, all the business, all the visionaire, all this, because the potential of the development. But this is not because the development is so big in China, it will be easy. Because China is very, very big, you know. Although, sure, the numbers is very important. I mean, this kind of numbers is lost in the middle of nowhere in China. And this is why connect to these numbers. And invite these big numbers from China come to Hong Kong. And meet the offer with the demand and the demand with the offer. This is very interesting. Mm. And use this platform with the Longines Masters of Hong Kong, the best show in Asia, with fantastic communication, fantastic visibility, the best riders and the best horses. This is the key. For me, this is very, very important. We need to connect all these depths, all these key players, not only from China, but from Europe and the rest of the world, for build the most beautiful foundation for the development of our sport, the first here in Hong Kong.
What this event also does is connect Australian people more closely with world-class show jumping. We don't have shows the calibre of this back home in Australia, and I've noticed over the years that you have increasingly attracted a lot of Australian people to this event as spectators, as people that might have trade stands, or even last year we had two riders compete here.
Sure. You know, this is a very good example. Australia riders, they came, two good riders from Australia came the last year. Okay, that was for them fantastic and new experience with the best riders from the world at the best level. They came here, they compete, they were very successful. Unbelievable communication here in Asia, around the world, and sure in Australia. Okay, and because this, after they go to Europe, they go to America. They did so well in the World Championship, and they got the qualification for go to the Olympic Games. This is why, from Hong Kong, on the way to the World Championship, today on the way to Tokyo 2020, we are the best meeting point. This is why, one more time, this Asia Horse Week. And we are very sad this year because, you know, one of the favorites was Edwin Alexander. normally she came and she was confirmed because she won the Grand Prix in the Longines Masters of Paris the leg before Hong Kong. But well, you know, with horses sometimes some stupid things happen, and so sad for the horses, but today the horse is much better. But this is the good answer. Be here in Hong Kong, meeting point from Australia to Europe to America, and make the best bridge, leverage for all sports.
Everything you've done in Hong Kong so far for horse sports has been groundbreaking, and that theme continued this year with the launch of the auction. Now, this was the sale of 20 embryos that combine some of the best show jumping bloodlines on offer in the world. And now you partnered up with Arcana, the French thoroughbred auction house, to make this sale happen. Explain the philosophy behind this.
You know, for me, it's, I'm very proud about this project because it's exactly the continuity of what we're doing with the sport. We try, well, I'm not a magician, I just want to transform my sport, transform my passion, and make my sport and my passion more professional. Exactly like the football, basketball, tennis, all the sport around the world. We need to be professional, like all the sport with the best visibility we can see today. This is why we transform the show jumping. We make a show and jumping, a real event. And today the continuity is make the same with the development. If you want to develop the sport, if you want to develop all the crossing industry, you need to develop the quality of the horses, you need to develop the horses' business, you need to develop all the foundation. And you need to be focused to a new generation of the riders. And you need to find the best horses for this new generation of riders. Exactly when you say, when you feel the potential, we need to have a lot of future very good horses. But how we can sell these horses, like we sell the last 25 years, will be impossible. This is why in 2005, and this fantastic opportunity to make this partnership with Arcana. You know, Arcana behind is Arcurial. It's art business. It's one of the best horse auction in Paris with Christie's and Sotheby's. It's exactly what I would like to do. I would like to transform the horses business like we transform the art business these last 30 years. I want to give to the future clients a totally transparency, a totally credibility, a totally traceability. You know, this is for me very important. And for the first time, it's something very unique this year. For the first time in Asia, in Hong Kong, we create in partnership with Arcana an auction, an embryo auction. And for the first time, the chairman, Dr. Simon, the ex-chairman, Dr. Simon, told me we have an international auction in Hong Kong because the only auction they have is only for the members. For the members, they can sell only to the members. But today, we are international. We sold to Brazil, to Deauville, to Europe, to everywhere. And this is very good news. This is the beginning of the story. I'm sure I one time will come with young horses, experienced horses. But this kind of trade horse, like Arcana, this is, I'm sure, the future of the best platform, and we are very proud about this partnership, and that was very, very successful. And embryo is good because we have the best mother, the best father. You can follow the story, you know, and from your fall to a fantastic show jumping horses, you can see today compete for million and million and million euro from the beginning, like an embryo with an accessible price.
Mm. The top priced embryo sold for 41,000 euros.
41,000 euro. It's a very expensive for an embryo. The level of the old auction that was, I think, 26,000-27,000 is one of the higher level in the world. We are very happy, but the quality of the embryo was very unique. We didn't came with an embryo collection for Asia or for Hong Kong. We came with the best embryo collection in the world, and this is important. It's, today I receive, it's not the case, very sad, a Picasso for my family. I don't want to sell my Picasso in Brussels or Belgium or my village. I will sell my Picasso in the best auction house where Hong Kong, Paris, New York. Embryo horses business is the same. We need to come to Hong Kong with the best and unique offer because we want not only Hong Kong clients or Asian clients, we want all international clients. And this is exactly today the result with this first auction presented by Arcana.
Is this embryo auction something you will do again next year and beyond?
Next year, next year, year after year, this embryo collection, this embryo auction will be a rendezvous every year. And after, we would like to make the same in Paris and in New York, but not in Paris. It will be not with embryo, but with sport horses, from yearling 2 years old to 6-7 years old maximum. Mm.
Christoph, you're a great visionary. Well done on everything you've achieved just here alone in Asia. You're really helping to drive the interest in equestrian sport in this part of the world and embracing the rapid growth in mainland China. It's quite extraordinary to see how equestrianism is really booming in this part of the world now.
Yeah, thank you very much. Sure, visionary. Sure, a very big dream. A little bit crazy, but fantastic team.
thank you
so much.
Next on our Asia Horse Week special, we catch up with former Melbourne-based jockey Chad Schofield, who's been based in Hong Kong now for 4 seasons. I chatted with Chad at the Longines Masters of Hong Kong, where he took part in a rather novel show jumping event.
Chad, it's wonderful to catch up with you here in Hong Kong. How long have you been riding in this region for now?
This will now be my 4th season. When this season's finished, I'll have completed 4, and can't believe how quickly it's gone. I originally came in a 3-month stint, hoping to stay, and I've just been extended ever since, and my goal is to stay even longer, hopefully.
4 years has flown by. Time does go quick here in Hong Kong. Have you enjoyed the journey so far?
I really have. I just love the racing here. I really enjoy the lifestyle. You know, we race twice a week, and it's just such high quality in every aspect. Although there's times I miss home, and when I watch the Spring Carnival and that, you know, I obviously wish I was there, but in the bigger picture, I'm very grateful and lucky to be in Hong Kong.
Hard work, I'm sure.
Yeah, it is. It's a funny place. It's obviously we don't have managers here, and we've got to manage ourselves, and you need to really be proactive to get the rides, because if you don't do it for yourself, no one else is going to do it for you. You know, in my career in Australia, I always relied on a manager and never had to do this side of things, and something I had to learn pretty quickly. And it's all going well, and just keep raising the bar and building my support base here, and keep riding winners.
You're a tall rider. Has Hong Kong helped you to manage your weight?
I would say racing twice a week probably has, because you know, we got 3 days in between each race, meaning to get ready for the next one. And you know, and in summer here it's really hot, and it's quite easy to manage your weight rather than sitting in the car for 4 hours a day driving to Bendigo and whatnot. But I'm tall, but I'm still riding really light. I'm riding the minimum here, which is 52. It takes a bit of work, but it's something I'm keeping on top of.
The lifestyle here and the experiences that you've had, what have been some of the key learnings on this mission so far?
Well, the races here, they're very fast, they're very tactical, and you really have to be sharp. I find the races in Hong Kong are won in the first half, not the second half of the race. Happy Valley in particular, you've really got to get your horse into the right position as quickly as possible. You've got to be very, very tactical, and I feel like that's really improved me the most as a rider.
What would you say has been your greatest accomplishment since relocating to Hong Kong?
Probably winning the Group 1 Classic Cup on a horse called Singapore Sling last year. That was my biggest race I've won in Hong Kong, and probably the biggest thrill I've got so far.
Do you get home much?
Whenever I can. Generally, in between each season, in our off-season, I'll go home and see the family, or if I happen to get a suspension, I'll head over and see my family and that. But I would say only about 2 or 3 times a year, but whenever I can.
Now, tonight you participated in a very interesting concept as part of the Longines Hong Kong Masters at Asia World Expo. It's called the Race of the Riders, and what happens is you team up with a top show jumping rider and you compete against other jockeys to do the same. How did you fare tonight?
Well, I ran 4th, but unfortunately that means I was last as well. There were only 4 people in the class. We were quite slow, but I jumped a clear round, and it's actually the first time I've ever show jumped. I didn't grow up show jumping, so I had good fun, and I'll hopefully put my hand up to do next year.
I saw you in the warm-up paddock in the lead-up. You sit on quite nicely as an equestrian rider. Had you done much of that type of thing before growing up?
Never. I learned to ride on a thoroughbred sitting short with short irons. So I had three lessons coming into tonight, and I just sort of played it by ear and did what I could, and it was good fun.
It's something different.
It's very different, and it was great. There was a big crowd here tonight, and though I ran last, I had good fun.
It would have been a bit nerve-wracking because the atmosphere is quite electric here, and thousands of people watching.
Yeah, it is. It was really nice, and thankfully the organisers gave us these bomb-proof warm blood horses that just made it oh so easy. We just had to point them in the direction we wanted to go.
On occasion in years gone by, a few of the jockeys have mucked up the course. That can often be the most challenging aspect of the whole thing.
Yeah, well, that's what I was stressed about the most. We actually had a practice round last night here and did the course we did now, and I've been thinking about it since then. I wasn't going to forget it, and I wrote it down and studied it, and I memorised it pretty well.
Has the experience given you a greater appreciation for equestrian, and in particular the ability required of a show jumping rider at this level?
It really has. Even watching the professionals here tonight, they're just fantastic riders. They really connect with their horse, and their horsemanship's phenomenal. So, yeah, I really have. I've grown a bigger respect for it, and like I said, I'll be putting my hand up to do it next year.
Now, back to race riding, and what are your plans in Hong Kong? I guess as it is for many, it's season by season, contract by contract. Are you pretty confident that things will be renewed again at the end of this season and the future is long-term here?
I'm hoping so. Currently, I'm sitting on 16 winners. In my three previous years, I've ridden about 30, 33 winners for the entire season. So I'm on track to get what I've got so far. Obviously, I want to raise the bar and do better, but I've had a bit of a quiet sort of 6 weeks, which has stalled my momentum. But hoping to get back into the flow of things and keep the winners coming. But yeah, I'm hopeful I can stay and make Hong Kong my long-term home.
Nice to see you, Chad, and good luck with the rest of the season.
Thanks, Joe.
Hope you're enjoying the program. Now switching our focus to what's been happening here in Australia this week. And the way the Godolphin juveniles are firing of late, the international powerhouse made to make up half of the Golden Slipper field. Tenley, the latest two-year-old winner for the team, is our winner of the week.
The Talking Horses, winner of the week.
And they're off. Garibaldi a little bit tardy out of the gates, and Jonah was slow out. Tenley being taken back, and White Hat All Cylinders jump well. Covert Offs was smartly into stride, and Fiery Red is right there, followed by Power Trainer. Garibaldi improving on the rails on the inside of Intrepidation. Then came Valdestana. Further back to Ice Bath. Now Rotator's caught deep and gets well back in the field to third last from Jonah. And Tenley is the last one. So All Cylinders takes the front by length on Covert Offs. Fiery Red in third position, followed then by Garibaldi, White Out Power Train, Intrepidatious, further back to Ice Bath, Rotators well back on, around the corner, and All Cylinders in front from Covert Ops, and Fiery Red's got room to go through. Then came Garibaldi, Intrepidatious, Ice Bath, Tenley, Rotator starting to make ground, but still five off the lead. All Cylinders giving a great sight. Fiery Red now goes to second. All Cylinders in front from Fiery Red, but look at Tenley charging down the middle of the track with the blinkers applied, and Tenley's blown them away. James Cummings and Kieran McAvoy off the back of a pretty hot tempo there, and Tenley's exploded. Very good finish. Unbeaten in two starts, this filly. She won a maiden at Kensington back on the 22nd of November, coming from well off the speed. And she has produced a brilliant turn of foot there to really power away over the last 75 metres and running the time of a 1:03.39. which will go down as a new race record, eclipsing that of the previous set by Santos.
By Medaglia d'Oro, Tenley threw her hat in the ring when she kept her record at a perfect 2-for-2 with what was a hugely impressive performance in yesterday's Piero two-year-old plate at Randwick. She was given a very patient ride by Kieran McAvoy and couldn't have looked better going to the line. Godolphin representative Darren Biedman has described her as one of the better contenders for the Golden Slipper in what is already shaping as a stellar group for Godolphin. The story behind Tenley is that she has a real Golden Slipper pedigree, being by Vancouver's sire Medaglia d'Oro out of the Lonroe mare Fratian, whose dam Dubai Ice is a sister to Vancouver's dam Skates. Dubai Ice and Skates are both out of the outstanding race mare Skating, the winner of the Group 1 AJC Doncaster Handicap and the Group 1 STC Winfield Classic, it was known back then. Purchased by John Ferguson on behalf of Dali for $525,000 out of the Sedgenhoe draft at the 2001 Inglis Easter Yearling Sale, Dubai Ice was a winner at 1,000 metres and was stakes placed in the Group 3 VRC Thoroughbred Breeders Stakes. She had 8 foals for 7 winners, including the stakes place getters Avalanches and Palm Trilogy, before Dali sent her to Japan in 2013. Now, Tenley is the third foal and first winner from Fratian. The daughter of Lonroe was carrying a shooting to win filly when she was consigned by Godolphin to the 2017 Inglis Australian Broodmare Sale, where she was purchased by Widden Stud for $185,000. The shooting to win filly was withdrawn from the recent Inglis Classic Yearling Sales. Fratian had a Sebring filly last spring and was bred back to Zoostar.
The results that matter. The Talking Horses Racing Run-Through.
Racing at Flemington yesterday, and the opening event on the program was a benchmark 84 over the mile. It was won by Pure Scott, a 4-year-old mare by Perealist, out of a Flying Spur mare in Thrall. Race 2 on the card, a benchmark 84 run over 2,000 metres, won by Shabao, a 4-year-old horse by Pastorius, out of a Royal Dragon mare Staying Alive. The third event on the program, a benchmark 90 over 1,200 metres. It was won by Godolphin's Intuition, a 4-year-old gelding by Street Cry, out of an Exceed and Excel mare, Radar. The listed Talendert Stakes over 1,100 metres, another winner for Godolphin. This time, Microphone, a 2-year-old colt by Exceed and Excel, out of an Anabar mare, Sung. Microphone is related to winners Leader and Radcliffe. The Group 3 Vanity, over 1,400 metres, won by Amphitrite, a 3-year-old filly by Sebring, out of a Redoute's Choice mare, Ocean Dream. She was sold for $50,000 through the 2017 edition of the Magic Millions Adelaide Yearling Sale. Race 6 on the card, a benchmark 90 over the mile. It was won by Thundercloud, a 5-year-old gelding by Manhattan Rain, out of a Kalanisi mare, Astral Flower. Thundercloud is related to a winner, Jazzahar, and was sold for $80,000 through Session 2 of the 2015 Inglis Australian Easter Yearling Sale. The Group 3 C.S. Hayes Stakes over 1,400 metres. It was won by The Inevitable for the Scott Brunton team. He's a 3-year-old gelding by Done Deal, who's getting plenty of winners at the moment, out of a King's High mare, Gift Bouquet. Winning relations to The Inevitable include Blarnik, Explosive Gift, Gift from Henry, Monfi, Only Roses, Petman, Single Command and Tory's Gift. The Inevitable was bought for $90,000 at the 2017 edition of the Magic Millions Adelaide Yearling Sales. The Group 1 Black Caviar Lightning Stakes over 1,000 metres, won by Chris Lees In Her Time, a 6-year-old mare by Time Thief, out of a Zetative mare, Hell It's Hot. In Her Time is related to winners Flame and Owl, Hot Art, Let's Misbehave and My Fair Lady, and went through the 2014 Inglis Classic Yearling Sales Summer Book and was passed in there. Race 9, the final event from Flemington yesterday, was the Japan Racing Association Handicap over 1,400 metres. Streets of Avalon was the winner, a 4-year-old gelding by Magnus out of a black Minolouche mare, Kamuniak. Streets of Avalon went through the 2016 Inglis Ready to Race Sale and is related to a winner, the Mad Hatter. Thanks for your company on Talking Horses this week. Hope you enjoyed the program and our special focus on the second edition of Asia Horse Week, which will get bigger and bigger each year. Thanks to our special guests that joined us throughout the journey. Until next time, take care. Bye for now.